Right, I think I'm on. Am I good? Yeah, okay. So I was at the Joy gathering last night, and it was awesome. I had a great time. We had lots of good food, but I must admit some of my joy was stolen because I had to go home before I got pie. So that was highly disappointing. But you know, even this morning I was thinking, I know Duff was talking about how sometimes like everything fits together and only Duff can describe it this way, but kind of like all the peas are fitting together and stuff like that. And there's this way of joy in that. And I was just thinking of that this morning, you know, either I'm getting old or something, but like I almost felt like I was going to cry when they were singing here this morning. I was thinking about my sermon and stuff and thinking about, you know, sometimes we forget how much joy God has from us. You know, it's one thing to talk about the type of joy that comes into our lives, but a lot of times we forget that actually we are pleasing to God when we worship and the great joy that is His. Alan assigned me a passage today, so I'm going to be talking from Matthew chapter 22, verses 15 to 22. And I mean, speaking about joy, if there's anything that can take that away, it's talking about taxes. And that's what we're going to be talking about this morning. I figured either Alan is mad at me for tax evasion, or he wants me to give more money to the church. So we'll figure it out as we go here. Matthew 22:15 says, "That's when the Pharisees plotted a way to trap him into saying something damaging. They sent their disciples with a few of Herod's followers mixed in to ask, 'Teacher, we know you have integrity. Teach the way of God accurately, are indifferent to popular opinion, and don't pander to your students. So tell us honestly, is it right to pay taxes to Caesar or not?' Jesus knew they were up to no good. He said, 'Why are you playing these games with me? Are you trying to trap me? Do you have a coin? Let me see it.' They handed him a silver piece. 'This engraving, who does it look like? And whose name is on it?' They said, 'Caesar.' 'Then give Caesar what is his, and give God what is his.' The Pharisees were speechless. They went off shaking their heads." Why at this point in Matthew do we have a question about taxes? You know, you wonder, Matthew has so many tax things. Yeah, a tax collector, I guess he's just really into talking about taxes as much as possible. I think this is like the third time he's talked about taxes. But why taxes again, and why taxes now? You know, I think, like, I wasn't here last time Alan preached, but I listened to what he was preaching on the vineyard and the wedding banquet, right? And I was listening to that thinking, yeah, this would probably make people pretty angry, you know, hearing some of these things that were said to them. So here's their kind of rebuttal to what Jesus had to say, where they're gonna definitely trap him this time. They're sure that if any question's going to trap Jesus, it's going to be this question about taxes. This is going to get him in hot water. But we got to put the situation into perspective. Like, why taxes? Why is that the thing that they're sure they're going to get him on? Because in about a 300-year span, spanning about 200 years before Jesus to about 100 years after him, there were 66 rebellions by the Jewish people over taxes alone. I was trying to do the math on that, but I keep thinking that a year is 36 months because I'm so used to signing up people on cell phone contracts. And then I thought, that's not true at all. So there's 36 months in 3 years, right? So that's like almost two rebellions a month. So this isn't some, you know, simple issue that Jesus is facing. It's an issue that for many Jews, it's worth fighting for. And it's worth dying for. But why such a big deal? I mean, heck, nobody likes paying taxes. I always hear people complaining about taxes, but you know, how many of us honestly want to murder and dethrone our government over it? If any of you had that thought, then the police will escort you out the back door there. Mike Hodges specifically. So clearly this is an issue that is much more than most of us can fathom. But why? Like, is it just money? Like, may the Jewish people just want to have as much money as they can, or what's going on there? You know, truthfully, it's really not a money issue at all. It goes way deeper than that. You see, it's not like the Jewish, or not the Jewish people, all Roman people had to pay between like 12 and 13 taxes. But it's this one specific tax that they're bringing up at this point. It's the poll tax. Really what this tax was is it was like a head count. Okay, it was a tax. It was like a because you exist and take up space kind of tax. Essentially, you could call it like the life tax. But why was it taken? Well, you know, I don't necessarily want to get into Caesar's head. I don't know what he was thinking. But I can tell you what many Jewish people were thinking. According to the Jewish Encyclopedia, about 25 years prior to the moment that they're asking Jesus this question, one Roman procurator named Quirinus had taken a census through taxation, which was regarded by the Jewish people as a sign of Roman enslavement. The result was a large-scale revolt sparked by the Zealots, who called for a stubborn resistance to the Roman oppressor. You see, for the Jewish people, the coin itself represented power. And years later, during the Bar Kokhba revolt, Simon Bar Kokhba replaced Roman coins with his own coins as a means of showing his own power. So coins, it's not just about money. This is a power game. This is a dominance game. Therefore, to give tribute to Caesar by paying the tax meant to acknowledge Caesar's power. And more importantly, in Jesus' case, to approve the giving of taxes to Caesar amounted to acknowledging the legitimacy of Caesar's power. Yet, on the other hand, to deny giving the tax would be seen as rebellion against Rome, which would be immediately crushed. It wasn't a simple question. And it was only made more complicated by the events that had preceded it. See, what happened at the beginning of chapter 21? It probably doesn't just come off the top of your head, but it was what was known as the triumphal entry. People shouting out loud and proclaiming Jesus as David's great son. A royal entry. Everybody buzzing. Who is this? What's going on here? Maybe you could cut the tension with a knife. If you were Jewish, you might be wondering, could this be the long-awaited Jewish king come to take his rightful throne from the Roman oppressor? But it wasn't just the Jewish people whose minds were buzzing. What about the Romans? Why are all these people talking about a king and proclaiming a king? Caesar's the only true king, and he will crush all who oppose him. Where will Jesus land? Will he dethrone Caesar, or will he crumble before him? Jesus' questioners would not be certain of the answer, but that he would say something controversial, they had no doubt. They had already buttered him up to do so. I can imagine them thinking something like this: this guy, he really says what's on his mind. He doesn't fear anybody. That's one thing we can count on here. You know, I think, as I thought about this, I thought, I'm like the perfect guy to have been set up for this, because I would have said the most controversial and dumbest thing possible and just been killed probably. So they would have been glad if they had caught me. But that's what they're counting on for Jesus, that he's going to say something extreme, doesn't matter which way, one side or the other, he's going to say something and get himself in trouble. So they had Jesus set up. He's either for Caesar or against him. He's either going to be hated by the Jews or he's going to be hated by the Romans. Those are his options. And they're thinking, let's see him wiggle his way out of this one. And what was Jesus' answer? Which of the two options they gave him would he choose? Door number one, Jesus. Door number two, Jesus. Drum roll on that one. And Jesus says, I'll take door number three. The usual Jesus thing. He gets down to the heart of the issue in a way that I'm sure they never imagined. He begins with a request and a question. He says, pass me the coin. So they hand him one. You see, Jesus asked for the coin because this is not just any ordinary old coin. There were various types of currency in Rome, but this one in particular was special. It had on it both the face of the emperor and an inscription. I mean, it depends on the coin and when it was dated and things like this, but generically it would say something like Caesar, son of God. As if taxing a people to remind them that they're enslaved in their own land wasn't enough of an insult. Caesar reminded them that he truly was their God. Whether they wanted to play their own religious games or not, the truth was plain. It's as if the coin was saying to them, I own you in every way imaginable. I own you. Your very existence belongs to me. And you'll remember this every time you pay your life tax. So whose portrait is on the coin? I imagine that portrait was burned in every Jewish person's mind. Just this revolting reminder of Roman oppression. Caesar's image. So Jesus says to them, give back to Caesar those things he sees fit to bear his likeness. He can have his coins. But wait. Are the Jews supposed to give in and admit that Caesar owns them? Not so fast, says Jesus. Caesar can have everything that bears his face, but give to God those things which belong to him. How so? What is Caesar's and what is God's? I read an online article as I was looking this up. By the way, I must admit, if you're reading commentaries on this passage, they are not helpful. Most of them say, this is so well known, everybody knows what it means. Like, eh, I must have grown up in the wrong church or something. But one online article states, Jesus, in this instance, he gave no indication as to how one should tell the difference between the things that are Caesar's and the things that are God's. Hey, not everything comes with a handy inscription after all. But to be truthful, that writer revealed his lack of understanding, because we all know of at least one thing with God's portrait and God's inscription on it. What's that? You and I. Jesus says, hey, Caesar can have his coins because all God ever wanted was you. What do you think you're worth? This is a serious question. What are you worth? What's the worth of your brother, your sister, your father, your mother? Or what's the worth of your own worst enemy? I think sometimes we forget. You know, sometimes life can really beat you down. Sometimes situations or people make you feel enslaved. Maybe terrible things happen and you feel oppressed. You know, people say, hey, that situation was taxing on me. Maybe life has been so taxing that it feels like, hey, I paid the life tax. Or maybe it's not situations, you know. I think sometimes, for me, and I've talked about this many times, but I'll keep harping on it, sometimes it's the things or the way we say things in church that can get you down, make you feel oppressed, beat down. You know, maybe you heard so many times that it's your sin that nailed Jesus to the cross. I got to admit, If you believe that, I'm convinced you're wrong. You see, it is not your sin that held Jesus to the cross. It wasn't. Jesus did not die on the cross because you're so bad. He did it because he's so good. It's not your sin that held Jesus to the cross. It's his love. You know, it might make for a really thoughtful worship song, you know, how deep the Father's love for us, this kind of thing, that our sin, it held him there. You know, and I've pondered that song many times. But it doesn't make for good biblical theology. And I'm going to tell you why. Because Revelation 13:8 tells us that Jesus is the Lamb who was slain before the foundations of the world. Think about that for a sec. It blew my mind when I first read that. Like, what's going on here? Think about that for a minute. The Lamb who was slain before the foundation of the world. Now that's revolutionary. We don't have time to go into all the intricacies of that, but it's clear that Jesus was a slain lamb long before you or I ever even had a chance to sin. It's who he always was. The real story here is not how bad you are, it's how incredibly good God is. You know, I want to say so much more about that, but I need to move on. You see, the truth is, we're precious to God. You're the one who bears God's face and his name. You know, it's one of the most commonly, I think, known passages and stuff like that, but the whole forsaking God's name, right? Taking his name in vain. This thing. One of the things I was reading about it, I was looking actually on YouTube and stuff at some Hebrew, and they were saying that to take God's name in vain, you know, we think it's, oh God, you know, saying those types of things, people get really offended by that. But ultimately, they said, Israel was given the name of Yahweh. And they bore that great name, and they were to take that name to the nations. And when they defamed his name, Yahweh would say to them, you know, you've defamed my name among the nations, you've dishonored my name. And really what they were saying, this Hebrew thing, is that to take the Lord's name in vain isn't to say words, it's to do actions. Because name in ancient cultures means character. Right? So it's to go out and say, hey, I follow Jesus. You know, I believe in God. And then to act completely and utterly different than Yahweh would act in any given situation. We bear his name. We have his face. We're to live as he lives because we're precious. You see, Caesar put his face on his most precious possession, and God put his face on what is most precious to him, your God's treasure. And he's not about to let anybody take that away from him. In fact, what's happening next here for Jesus? Jesus is heading to the cross to redeem humankind. Do you know what the word redeem really means? You know, I'm sure most of you probably do, really. It means to buy back. But sometimes, you know, when we get into these words, to merely say what the word means, it doesn't bring the full meaning, because there's no emotion attached to buy back. I bought back some noodles the other day that I left, you know, like, it doesn't mean anything to us. But in context, when would you ever buy back a person? You see, in the Roman world, it was common for people to be taken as slaves and sold in the market. Maybe you're a poor widow with no means to support yourself, and your husband died in the war, which are always happening. Maybe you lived on a farm somewhere, you couldn't support it any longer, so you have to move to the city and turn to prostitution to earn any money to survive. Then you become a slave. You know, maybe you're a baby and you're found by a slave trader because you were just thrown out the window or left in a Roman bath or something because your family didn't want to have to spend the money to raise another expensive young girl. There they would be, waiting to be sold to the highest bidder. And what are they worth? What's a person worth? Their worth was whatever someone was willing to pay. You might say, hey, you over there, two silver. Okay, two silver. For this fine woman? There's got to be more than that. Come on. Three silver. Wait, three silver. Going once, going twice. Sold. Three silver. Is that the worth of a woman? Is worth determined by the amount someone is willing to pay for your life? If so, what are you worth? The Bible really gives us a narrative when it talks about our lives, because narratives have emotions. They're not just words, and it's not math. And it tells us that when we were enslaved, when we were up there waiting to be sold alone, with nothing left, no dignity, God bought us back. He redeemed us from slavery. And what is the price? The price is his own life. You're worth an infinite amount. You're worth the very life of God. You're his treasure. And what he's asking and what he's saying is, he's calling. He's calling out to us and he says, I want my treasure back. No matter how tarnished you think you are, and there is no price too high. To pay the coin, to not pay the coin. The real revolution is to realize our own worth. I truly believe that the Pharisees, they had paid, you know, they tried to avoid handling the money. I think maybe that's why they sent their disciples instead of being there themselves. Hey, you guys take the coin. We're not touching that thing. You know, the graven image is something the Jews, they're not going to be anywhere near, especially in the temple. Can you imagine that? So they send their disciples, oh yeah, it's okay, you guys do it. You know, but in the end, whether or not the Pharisees paid the tax, whether or not they gave Caesar back his coin, they paid way more than Caesar ever asked, because he asked for coins and they gave him their lives. What do Caesars do? How do they get on thrones? Well, they usually betray you and kill you. What are the Pharisees about to do to Jesus, an innocent man? Let's trap him. Then we'll win for sure. They forgot what a person is worth. You're a treasure. Don't ever forget that. I just want to pray for you. God, we thank you so much. You know, we read Psalm 8. What is man that you are mindful of him, the Son of Man that you care for him? You gave us dignity beyond anything we ever asked for or imagined. You know, the psalmist asked that question, wrestled with that question, was in awe. I mean, we have hindsight and we know we're worth even more than the psalmist could have wrestled with, God willing to pay his own life for ours. You know, God, sometimes I talk to people and they tell me, you know, the problem with humanity is we think we're worth too much. I think the problem with humanity is we don't think we're worth enough. God, help us to see ourselves as treasure, but not to stop there, but to see every single person in our lives as a treasure. Whether we're going to work after this, you know, we're going to a business, we're going to a coffee shop or whatever, help us see every single person we run into as precious to you. God, keep calling to us and show us how special we are and help us to give you back your treasure. Amen.